Morning, I'm Tasha Swinscoe. I am the Chief Executive of the West of England Academic Health Science Network, and I'm also the Chief Officer Lead for the 15 HSNs for patient safety. I've got two colleagues with me this morning, and as they come up and present, they'll introduce themselves as well as we go through. Can I say a great huge welcome to Expo 19, but also to our session this morning where we're going to be launching the AHSN Patient Safety Plan, a copy of which you will see on your tables. It's the blue one. But we're also really pleased to launch our Care Homes report as well, which is a meatier document. That's the orange one. And we're going to be making reference to those two documents as we go through. So can I just start with a quick show of hands. Who in the room doesn't work for one of the academic health science networks? Come on, be brave. Excellent. Okay. So a double welcome to you, because I know that we are clashing with the main stage event where you could have listened to Dido Harding and Lord Pryor. So thank you very much for coming to this one.
Tell them that they'll go.
No, they won't go, because we're going to lock the doors in a second. So what we'd like to do this morning, and I'm going to only spend a couple of minutes talking through some very brief slides, and then I'm going to ask Cheryl and Laura to come up, and then we'll have a bit of time at the end for discussion or questions, is we would like to talk to you about how our patient safety plan, the blue document, is supporting the recently published NHS patient safety strategy, and explain to you and talk to you about some of the things that we've been doing over the last couple of years that describe how the HSN network and the patient safety collaboratives have been really successful in delivering really impactful change for patients in the NHS, but also talk to you about the things that we're planning to do in the future. So patient safety for the HSN network is a complete guiding principle for a lot of the work that we do. It's not the only guiding principle and not the only lens that we look through, but it is one of the core ones. You'll recognise from this slide the three components of the National Patient Safety Strategy: insight, involvement and improvement. And what we're describing here is how the patient safety collaboratives and the rest of the HSN network, not just the PSCs, will support the delivery of that, looking through the lens of patient safety, drawing on our understanding of the metrics and the measurement and incident reporting, supporting the workforce, building capacity and capability for quality improvement for patient safety, and also delivery of the national patient safety programmes that are in the strategy. You'll also recognise, if you've had a glance at that document, that this is one of the national ambitions of the patient safety strategy nationally. 1,000 extra lives and £100 million saved. And the HSN is a significant contribution in that through the patient safety collaboratives and all of the other HSN network work that we do through the innovation exchanges and other pieces of work that we do. And our ambition is to support the strategy, but also to support lots of different ways of delivering improvement work in different areas of our AHSNs. And we will support that through these six core principles. We'll support the foundations of the national strategy, but then we'll also deliver the patient safety strategy improvements. We'll work with our members, because we're embedded, each of the 15 of us, in our local regional situations. We'll work with our STP, our ICS, our individual provider and commissioner members in our integrated care systems as they develop, to ensure that patient safety is a core element of all the work that they do. We'll work also alongside our regional safety teams. Seven of those have just been recently established. So we are some of the connectors that bring together all of those individuals who are all trying to work in patient safety and improvement in each of our regional teams. The PSCs and the HSNs have access all areas, and we're very good at bringing individuals together to work with us collaboratively to push through improvement programmes. And we'll also contribute to the Patient Safety Strategy Capacity and Capability Building Programme, particularly around leadership development. And as you've seen the new regional safety teams develop and the STPs develop, there's an awful lot of scope and requirement there to bring these people together to work in different ways. And we'll also work alongside of all of our other system partners in Health Education England, the other national bodies and the arm's length bodies. And again, because we're system connectors in each of our regions, we're able to do that collaboratively in partnership with them. And that's why we think the key element of our patient safety plan is that we can do that more than anybody else can. And we've got successes that we're now going to describe to you in Cheryl's part of the presentation that explain to you what we've learned over the last couple of years by working in that way and how that will then support our patient safety plan going forward. So I'm really pleased to introduce you now to Cheryl Crocker, who is the AHSN Network Patient Safety Director.
Thank you, Tasha. So I'm just going to talk about some of our successes and why we are ideally placed to be doing this work and supporting the NHS Patient Safety Plan. So under the theme of insight, which is one of the three pillars of the NHS safety strategy, this reflects the understanding of safety by drawing on intelligence from multiple sources of patient safety information. So we would like to draw on some of our work as an AHSN network. So PRECEPT is the administration of magnesium sulfate to preterm mothers who are preterm to prevent cerebral palsy. And we have been running this from the west of England as a project across the west of England's system. All the maternity units took part. And we evaluated that model to find that this model was hugely successful and that could be replicated across all the network. So this is now spread across the whole 15 AHSNs. And we're seeing some fantastic results as a result of that. The same for the Emergency Laparotomy Collaborative. This started with Kent, Surrey and Sussex, who involved Wessex and the West of England AHSNs. They developed a collaborative model using the Breakthrough Series model from the IHI. This again was successful and we've seen some great results here too. So this has now been shared across the rest of the AHSN network. So all 15 AHSNs have rolled out the Emergency Laparotomy Collaborative. So we've learnt from rolling out in a local area what works, what doesn't work, what could be successful, and how we might replicate that through our spread and adoption programme. We've also introduced some new innovations. So the Suspicion of Sepsis Insight dashboard is a new dashboard which captures sepsis in a different way. So using two codes that are able to identify sepsis, whether that's related to urinary tract infections or respiratory infections, it can track length of stay, it can track mortality, and it gives us much more precise data around sepsis than we've ever had before. And we've been able to develop this from the Imperial and Oxford AHSNs, and now all our AHSNs are using this dashboard with their provider organisations. So we've given you an insight just to a couple of the spread and adoption programmes that have been successful. We'd like to share with you some of our examples of impact. So our work in care homes, so you'll see this throughout the orange document, the care homes report. We've done a return on investment for one of the programmes called LPZ, which demonstrates £4.5 million savings just in the reduction of pressure ulcers alone in a number of care homes. If we were to replicate this across the AHSN network, we'd see a huge impact. Safety huddles from Yorkshire and Humber saw 107% return on investment when it was utilised to prevent and support falls. And we've seen mental health prevention, £11.3 million over 10 years to be saved. Catheter-associated urinary tract infections collaborative achieved a 30% reduction across the participating trusts. And the emergency lap collaborative saw a 30-day mortality reduced from 9.8% to 8.2%. And we have multiple examples throughout our safety plan of examples where we've achieved impact, such as managing deterioration. So we've spread the early warning system, the national early warning system, across the whole of England. You can see where we started in quarter one. We did our first survey of trusts who were using an early warning system. And through our work as collaboratives, we've been able to improve increase that so that 96% of provider trusts are now using the National Early Warning System and 100% of ambulance services. And the diagram below that shows you the work that is continuing in year two in other sectors outside of the acute and ambulance. And you can see there's a huge spread of work across the whole of the health and social care system. We're also doing work in medicine safety across the AHSN network. So there's two examples here around the transfer of care around medicine and PINSA, which is about safe prescribing in primary care through the intervention of pharmacists. And again, we're seeing fantastic results here. You can see with Precept, the work that we're doing when we started, you can see the inflection point when the AHSNs got involved. You can see the huge rise in participating trusts and the number of mothers that have benefited from magnesium sulfate. Again, with emergency laparotomy, you can see the inflection point where the AHSNs got involved and a huge improvement across the number of participating trusts, which again will reflect patient benefit. Transfer of care around medicines, again, the inflection point where the AHSN began to spread and adopt this work has seen huge impact. So these are some examples where you can see where the AHSN gets involved and we spread innovative ideas that this has a massive impact and patients benefit and trusts and their staff benefit. Again, we've got huge impacts around some of these programmes. So Precept has a potential lifetime saving of £5.1 million. Emergency lap, 85,000 fewer bed days will be used and £9.8 million saved to the NHS. And transfers of care, around £54 million potential savings. When you add all these up from just seven national programmes, that's a huge impact. And we're about to embark on our new range of programmes for 2020, which will take us through the next 3 years. Moving on to the second pillar in the NHS safety strategy is involvement. So that's the involvement of patients, carers and staff. We've also been doing some work around just culture and workforce. And we've, in some of the AHSNs, developed a second victimhood programme, which supports staff who've been involved in harm in hospital settings. And we know from the evidence in the literature that when staff are involved in harm, it has a terrible psychological burden from them, resulting in absence from work and sickness and mental health problems in the future. With the second victimhood programme, it means staff are staying at work, they are improve their mental health and feel that they are supported to continue. We've also got a very active patient and public involvement network across the whole of the AHSN supporting patient safety programmes. And this is absolutely vibrant across each of the AHSNs. And we understand that patients and the carers and service users need to be actively involved and engaged and design the improvements and innovations that we see in the future. And moving on to the third pillar, which is around the improvement initiatives, the programmes that we're running throughout the AHSN network. There are seven examples taken from the NHS Patient Safety Strategy, beginning with the National Patient Safety Improvement Programme, previously called the Patient Safety Collaborative Programme. And this has a number of strands. We've talked about deterioration, there's maternal and neonatal health, medicine safety, and the adoption and spread programmes. Secondly, maternity and neonatal health is a programme in its own right. Medicine safety will reflect the medicine safety NHS strategy when that is released, but our focus is around supporting care homes in the administration of medicines. Mental health safety improvement programme, safety of older people, which we'll talk a little bit more about when Laura comes to the stand and brings that to life, and research and innovation, which includes NEVER events. So an example of some really innovative work throughout the network has been a number of products which are based in human factors engineering to reduce and prevent NEVER events from occurring. So the picture on your left is WireSafe. This is a human factors engineered design product which reduces the retention of guide wires when you're putting in central lines. You need to thread the guide wire through the device to enable you to open the pack therefore to get to the next stage of the procedure, which is where all the sutures, etc., are kept. If you can't have the guide wire in your hand, you can't open the box, and therefore you can't proceed with the procedure. And the one on your right is called NIC. It's a non-injectable connector for arterial lines, and it prevents the injection of any fluids, drugs into an arterial line in the intensive care setting. So I'm going to finish there and hand over to Laura. Laura Hales works for the East Midlands Academic Health Science Network Patient Safety Collaborative.
Thank you, Cheryl. So I'm bringing this with me. So everyone will have a copy of this on their tables. And this, as Tasha said at the beginning, this is what we're launching today. But I'm just going to give you a really, really brief overview of our React 2 series and our LPZ project. But you can read more about that project and others. But that project's on page 14. So if you're piqued by any of that, or any of what I'm about to say, all the links are on page 14 and 15. So React 2 series, this all started with our care homes and with our community nurses, and it started with React to Red. It started in our tissue viability nursing teams in the community, and they wanted to have a training package that was easy for care homes to understand, but also to actually access. So this is all online, and our care homes love this type of learning, and they say it's so easy to do any time, day and night, which is very important if you've got different people working different shifts. So it started with React to Red, which now has been rolled out nationally. And we have, these are just to name but a few, we're getting new React 2s all the time. Anyone can write these and it goes through a process. If you go on the React 2 website, as I said, it's more information on page 15 of your book, you'll be able to see the fantastic free training resources that are available to anybody and everybody. So I'm going to tell you a bit more about LPZ. LPZ is a very complicated Dutch word, which I'm not going to even try and pronounce. But what it stands for is Care Homes Harms Audit. It's an audit that happens once a year, and it audits these six common care problems within homes. This happens across Europe, so when our care homes take part in this, they can have international benchmarking as well as regional benchmarking. We have added a UK module to this, which is around deterioration, and that deterioration is an audit module which asks around things around the recognition, response and communication of deterioration in care homes, because that links to one of the four national work streams that we do as part of our Patient Safety Collaborative work. This hopefully gives you a bit of a picture about just how big these events are and how enthusiastic and welcoming the environment is. So LPZ is much more than just measurements. It's much more than just that once a year audit. We have these three events a year. And we have different themes to these events. So the next one that we have is in October. That will be getting new homes on board, spreading the word about what they can do and how they can improve once they've got their own data. And then it prepares them to get ready for their results, which they'll receive in January, February time. At that results event, we have lots of different experts in the room, so from continence teams, falls teams, etc., so that if a care home identifies a problem or an area for improvement, they can go to those experts in a World Cafe style and get the expertise they need. What we've noticed over the last 4.5 years is that, as you can probably tell from some of the pictures, the culture's really changing. And actually, this has become more of a social movement than just a measurement. And actually, the care homes themselves are experts, and they're seeing themselves as experts now. So they're sitting on those tables and saying, actually, do you want to hear from us? This is what we did to improve falls in our care home. And they're also standing on the stage and really proud of the work that they've done. And LPZ has really helped them to know their numbers and to own the improvements and the measurements that they're doing. So you don't need just me rattling on.
This is Yvonne's story. Yvonne has kindly given us permission to show her photographs and to tell her story. In December 2016, Yvonne was admitted to Alexandra Lodge Care Home as an emergency admission in a very poor state. She was not eating and had been living alone in very poor conditions with little external support. She weighed 5 stone 5 pounds. Yvonne had a severe pressure ulcer to her skin, which was deep and very painful. She was very anxious being around others and wouldn't let anybody touch her. She was unable to swallow safely. She was immobile and had a very poor sitting balance. She wasn't communicating or engaging with anyone and appeared frightened. Imagine how Yvonne must have felt. What Alexandra Lodge did to help Yvonne. LPZ came at a time of significant challenge for the home, but LPZ seemed like it may help. Staff from different roles attended LPZ events and were inspired by what they learnt and from meeting staff from other care homes. They implemented training for all staff to ensure best practice was adopted. They focused on Yvonne's nutrition. The cook attended LPZ events and realised the importance of her role within the home. The home were well supported by visiting healthcare professionals. The team approach within the home was strengthened, and regardless of roles, everybody worked together. This was a pivotal moment in their improvement journey. They allowed Yvonne time to settle at her own pace and gently encouraged her with her appearance. This allowed her to regain her self-esteem and to integrate with other residents. 2 years later, Yvonne now weighs 7 stone 10 pounds. She is on a normal diet and eats well. The pressure ulcer has completely healed. Her upper body strength has improved and she can sit unaided. Yvonne takes an active part in care home activities and interacts well with others. She is a very different lady to when she first moved into Alexandra Lodge. The morale and teamwork within the home has massively improved. This home was rated by the CQC as requires improvement back in 2016. Through the work of LPZ, when inspected in 2018, the home was rated good. One of the care home managers said, "LPZ is a tool that really helped us to improve. We learn from all the training and the sharing of ideas, and you realise you're not alone. Winning awards was a massive morale boost and inspires us to keep making improvements for the benefits of our residents." The East Midlands Patient Safety Collaborative would like to thank Yvonne, her family and the dedicated staff at Alexandra Lodge Care Home in Nottingham for allowing us to tell their story.
So I'm going to hand back over.
Thank you. Is this on? Thanks, Laura. Can you hear me? I don't know. Is that on?
Yes.
Yeah, lovely. Excellent. What a lovely way to finish that presentation. That really, for me, sums up what we're trying to say in the patient safety plan for the HSN network, which is about how much can we achieve if we all work collaboratively together. So I'm now going to invite people to ask any questions or make a comment. It doesn't actually have to be a question. You could just comment on the documents in front of you if you want to. I'm going to ask... Family, hold back. So for now, AHSN network colleagues, let's give everybody else who's in the room who isn't from the HSN network the opportunity to ask questions, challenge us, if that would be fine. So any question from anybody who's not from the HSN network, first of all? Yes, thank you.
I'm going to give you this because we're recording a podcast.
So. Thanks very much. Very helpful insights. I just wondered how much overlap is there with some of the initiatives with the thermometers, for example.
So safety thermometer.
Yes, yeah.
You might be better to answer this, actually.
So safety thermometer in care homes is only used around the Essex area, and it's called PROSPER. The programme's called PROSPER. So it's a very different tool, as you probably know. It started in acutes and community mental health, and it records the number of things, so pressure ulcers, falls, but it doesn't record the how and the why. So LPZ asks other questions, which is around the demographics of the home, so that you can compare apples with apples. So you're comparing residents in different homes in the same way. It also asks questions around the interventions, policies, procedures, staffing arrangements, training, so that when you want to go to look at care home results, you might find, for example, Germany has the lowest prevalence of pressure ulcers in their care homes across all participating countries in Europe. And you'd want to know why. So is it because they have more staff? The answer is no. Is it because they use more equipment? The answer is no, they use half the amount of equipment we use. So what is the answer? The answer is they move people more frequently, actually. And sometimes we think that the answer is more equipment or more training or more, and actually Germany has shown us that actually it is about movement and you can do that cheaply. So it does allow us to compare and understand why results differ and where best practice truly exists. I personally don't think safety thermometer does that. I think it's up to then the internal arrangements to understand why there may be differences across their wards or departments, whereas LPZ gives you that visual straight away.
Thank you. Nice question. Somebody over here had a question. Did you?
Did reluctantly.
No, reluctantly. Don't, yeah, okay.
Thank you. So I'm actually from Sweden. I don't know if there is anyone else here from outside the UK. No? So I have a lot of questions, but I won't ask them all because I think they're not relevant for you all. But regarding the LPC, as a small elderly care home, do you have any support anyway? How big is the sort of investment in time and money to go with the LPC?
You two again?
Yeah, we've just been doing this, and you probably know the up-to-date figures. So I'm going to hand over to you again. Yeah. Sorry.
So the cost per home, we pay Maastricht to analyse the data. It's a not-for-profit unit in their university. So there is a cost per home and a cost per resident. So that comes to about for 50 care homes, 1,045 residents. It came to about. Nat, I'm looking at you. not very much. Yeah. So that's how we pay. The investment from our team is around supporting the care homes. So we have a person on secondment for 2 days a week that does that, supports our care homes, plus the events and our team that support them. So minimal, I would say, investment. Not a huge investment when you compare the amount of money we put into our acute sector, for example.
Are there any other questions for us? Oh, Chris has got one in the corner.
Yeah, so the graphs that you showed, there was some impressive sort of upward lines showing how things were getting spread very quickly through the patient safety collaboratives. Is there any kind of learning that you've got, any sort of key points, What were the triggers? What were the main things that have achieved that level of spread so quickly?
Should we all have a go at that one? Because probably from different AHSNs would, and working in different regional patches and with the same programmes, have probably got different learning, but there are probably some common themes. If I pick up a couple, so for Precept, I think it was a very clear innovation and intervention at the beginning with a very good toolkit. We split the country into two halves, so we didn't try and do everything all at once. We did it in two tranches. We had boots on the ground in terms of we funded clinical leaders and clinical champions in each of the maternity units that we were targeting to give them time back to be able to do the training, to be able to adopt Precept. So we had good, strong clinical leadership. And I think you see some of those themes coming across in some of the other national programmes as well. And I don't think we can get away from the fact that for adoption of any national programme across a country, you need time, both terms of time to do it. So you can't do it in a couple of months. It takes, as we've shown, a couple of years to do it. So it's that expanse of time. But also you need to put time into doing it. And that is resource, that's paying people to be able to
adopt something, train people, and then embed it in their units. So though I think those are the things that I would say from my particular AHSN I've seen as key learning in terms of what works to spread something across a large regional geographical patch. Cheryl and Laura have probably seen slightly similar things and others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for example, if you're wanting to spread a checklist or a care bundle, those tools by themselves will not necessarily show improvements. It is around the culture, the leadership, the capability and the support required in the quality improvement to embed those so that they achieve their maximum impact. And that's what the AHSN Network, the Patient Safety Collaboratives do. They provide that level of support and they make sure that that support is ongoing and that the innovation is sustained before we pull away. Otherwise, you can spend a lot of time and investment in introducing a new initiative and then a year later you leave it and you see the figures decline. So we've learnt that you can't just walk away after a year. You need to make sure that that innovation is sustained by the system in which it's being used.
I would just add to that that these things make sense. And that's the biggest thing, the biggest buy-in that we can get from our clinical colleagues. Most of this work is done through our networks and through collaboratives, either existing ones or ones that we set up because of our networks. And we tap into the people who are already doing this work but perhaps don't have the support and structures around them. And so it's just finding those who have got a keen interest in things like precept. It just makes sense to do it.
And I think building in on that point, it's about, it's sort of hashtag pick the right project at the beginning. And the academic part of the Academic Health Science Network then comes into play. So if you're trying to roll out an intervention or an innovation that has got a good evidence base, then it's more likely to be accepted and welcomed by your clinical colleagues than if you're trying to roll something out that doesn't have that evidence base attached to it. So I think there was a last question here, Mandy.
It's not a question. Okay. It's to support what you were saying. I would say that actually it's given the clinicians on the ground who you're asking to change the headspace and the time to do that. Because actually they're on this treadmill where they're constantly working. And you need to give people the time and the space to think through how they're going to do it differently. And I think that's why the programmes have been so successful, especially the likes of Precept, because we're giving people that space and that support, both clinically and in a project management kind of way.
Yeah, totally agree with you, yes. Are there any further questions?
Can I ask one more?
Chris, yes.
You're a gentleman from the non-NHS.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So the LPZ project, from what Laura was saying, looked like a really good example of how NHS and social care are being integrated. How good do you think this country is at integrating across those systems, and what role have the Patient Safety Collaboratives got in helping to kind of make those connections?
Mm. So shall I start? And then we can go along the line again. I don't think we're particularly great at it at the moment, if I'm honest, but I think that's hopefully where I would see the ICSs and the STPs coming into their own in the future. I think at the moment many of them are still not as mature as they will end up being, and I think those relationships in some regions are still emerging and becoming more crystallised. But that's the whole point behind the STPs and the ICSs in the long term, is to look at health and social care as a collaborative across a regional patch. The role of the PSCs, I think it goes back to some of the points we were making earlier about the PSCs and the HSN personnel and staff having access into those STPs and ICSs and being a critical friend, a collaborator, a connector. We don't go into the STPs and the ICSs with any side attached to us. We're not going in with any performance management agenda at all. So we can go in as an objective support mechanism. And I think I see that I think the PSCs and the AHSNs will continue to do that over the next couple of years. I think that's a critical role for us.
I absolutely agree, and I think the pivotal role of the AHSN network and PSC staff is that they are connectors, neutral brokers. So they allow the trust to develop and build on those relationships, and I think that is the key thing that brings system partners together.
And I think I've already noticed a difference within the last 2 years. When we first started, this LPZ has been going for 4.5 years, but when I first started in this project, I would go to meetings and acute trusts that particularly were saying, why are you investing in social care? And why this was at an audit event. And it was trying to explain how it has its whole system and how it has an impact. Now I absolutely do not get that challenge whatsoever, and all I get is support and offers to help and to make the project go further faster. Mm-hmm. So I think that mindset is changing and has changed over the last 2 years, and I think will really have a faster change going forwards.
Yes? Yes, please do. Yeah, well, I think we've got time for one more question. So we take yours.
Well, it's just really, I think, follow on from what the state was saying
about the examples of what we do in clinical practice, and particularly with the care home safety, because that example was a great one, wasn't it, of improving through the initiative from a CQC result to a much better result, really. So I was just wondering. And that's also a very good example of the importance of social care, isn't it, for a lady like this who we could see very vulnerable, mm-hmm. lots of problems, and as many social problems as medical and nursing. But to help combat some of those difficulties, is there much connectivity between CQC and AHSNs to help deliver that, or is there enough?
That's developing, I think, is probably the short answer to that. That hasn't been so much in the past. We, as an AHSN network, we try to retain our, as Cheryl says, our honest broker, sort of system partner relationship with our member organisations. If we went in with a CQC directive behind us, then that sort of changes the relationship, and that changes how you can then support member organisations to improve, because they see you as part of the establishment, if you like, rather than part of their local system. But I think the CQC are becoming more wise with the long-term plan to the need for organisations to have an innovation and improvement agenda. So they're starting to look for that when they go in and do their CQC inspections. So I think that relationship will emerge more over the next couple of years, but we will be very careful about how that is framed.
I think the care homes themselves talk to the CQC when they're being inspected about their work. And we're seeing LPZ, for example, and other projects across the HSN in their reports now as an example of good practice. So, and we do invite CQC representatives to our events so that they're aware of what we're doing locally. As Tasha said, I think that relationship is developing, and I think they're understanding that our role in the system as neutral, honest brokers is really important, so that we don't share information about the care homes with anyone else. Mm-hmm. That information belongs to the care homes, and it's entirely up to them who they share it with.
So I think there might be one question there.
One more, yes.
Do you have time for one more?
Time for one more.
Right. So this might be a little bit an out-of-band question, but in terms of selecting the projects that go with the network and that claim the headspace of the clinical staff, would you say, do you have, how do you do to right-size those strategy deployments? How do you choose the project, and is there anything that you could think you could do better in that department?
Mm. Oh, that's such a great question. It's probably the subject of a half an hour answer. In a nutshell, we try and do that in partnership with the commissioners who are commissioning the work from us. And that is improving over the years. I think the set of programmes that we've talked to you about this morning come to an end, some of them in March 2020. And we're actively working with our commissioners, which at the moment is NHS Improvement and NHS England, to choose the next round of national programmes. Some of those have come up through the AHSN. So an AHSN, as we've described this morning, may have tried one rolled it out across a patch. Now it's ready for national spread. So we'll offer that to our national commissioners, and we'll work out whether the evidence base is strong enough and the sort of spread strategy is strong enough and good enough for it to be taken up by the 15. Other programmes can come through other different approaches. They could come from the Health Foundation or through various other spread people in the past. I can't think of the Clark, yes, or some of the research bodies. So I think they come at us in various different ways, and then we look at the whole bundle of them and pick the right ones. I think in the past we've done quite well at picking some good projects that have a good evidence base and that clinicians have been welcoming of. So we've learnt from that. We've looked at what's worked well and what hasn't, and we'll take that into the process that we're going through now. It's not a particularly scientific, however much you try and make it scientific. But I'm happy to talk to you offline a little bit more about the depth of that, as you're interested in how we've done it in the past and how we're planning to do it in the future. Okay. So I think we'll call it the end of the session there, if that's okay, and let you get to your next session. But can I say a huge thank you for coming to this one this morning and to helping us launch our two plans. There is another session on the patient safety plan if you want to hear it all again, or if you want to ask us more questions. And that is tomorrow morning at 10:15 on the HSN stand downstairs. So thank you very much, and I wish you a happy Expo 19.